Buckwheat to the assembly this afternoon. I'll draw your attention if you turn to Acts, the 7th chapter. Acts, the 7th chapter is a famous passage in the Bible that I will admit that I don't think I've given enough credit to. It's the sermon that Stephen gave. And then we remember what happened to Stephen once he got done with his sermon. The Jews were so angry and so upset with him, they stoned him to death. And so for this month, we're looking at some of the subtopics that he used in his sermon. And so this morning we heard about Abraham. So if you notice in the chapter 7, the first little passage, that's what Stephen used as the basis of his sermon. He talked about Abraham. The second passage is what we're going to talk about this evening, are the patriarchs. And that's going to pick up in about, verse 9 of Acts chapter 7. But before I do this, I want to kind of think about this and let you have this thought in your mind. Imagine you were a red-blooded Jew. I mean, you're a Hebrew of the Hebrews. Would anything that was said this morning have angered you? Would you have been upset at all from the sermon that you heard this morning? Very little, the way I look at it. We heard about how great of a man Abraham was. We heard of the great faith that Abraham had and how he left his home and he did exactly what God told him to do. Would you be upset at all? And I can't think of anything that would make those folks mad. I say anything. I would say, well, maybe we would make the connection between Jesus and the church and how Abraham, was kind of the beginning of, had things to do with the church. That might have upset you a little bit. But I can just kind of see a Jew just kind of blowing that off. They got part of the story right, but not the whole story. Well, it's kind of the same way when we start studying about the patriarchs. We're going to read this whole passage, and I want you to think, and I want you to pretend that you're a Jew. And I want you to see if there's anything that Stephen said that would upset you. He's just basically telling the story of Jacob and his sons, mainly Joseph and his time in Egypt. Doesn't seem like anything that would make anyone upset. But by the end of his sermon, these Jews were so worked up that they were willing to take stones and start throwing them at a man and kill him. I cannot imagine the amount of rage that it would take to kill a man by stoning them to death. But somehow, Stephen was able to get them so worked up in a very short amount of time that these men were willing to do that. So I want you to think about this as we go through this lesson. Because in the past, I've always considered Acts chapter 7 as somewhat of a history lesson. Let's go through the history of the Jewish nation. Let's talk about Abraham. Let's talk about the patriarchs. Let's talk about Moses. Let's talk about the tabernacle, the temple, and so forth. The bottom line is, the Jews did not need a history lesson. They already knew the history. Stephen had a purpose for the things that he was saying. And Stephen had a purpose for every word that came out of his mouth. He was being led by the Spirit. And I have a lot more respect now for this sermon. So we're going to look at this for a little while this morning, or this afternoon. I also have the lesson coming up at the end of the month, kind of tying this all together. And you may get a little bit of a double lesson at the end of the month, because I believe there's something very important here that we have to understand. But for this evening, we're going to limit our remarks to the idea of the patriarchs. And so he tells the story about how Jacob had the sons, and then we had Joseph who was sold into slavery and so forth. That's the story we're going to look at tonight. Before we go further, though, let's take opportunity now to go to God in the Word of Prayer. Well, I've mentioned this before, but as a speaker, I find this to be kind of a difficult thing to do sometimes, because there's such a variation of knowledge in any given audience. And sometimes it's difficult because folks that know a whole lot more than me, and I'm sitting here trying to teach something. And at the same time, we got some little kids. I mean, I want Jake to get something out of this lesson as well. And so some lessons are difficult to do. I think this one's kind of neat, though, because there's going to be kind of an upper level aspect of this you really got to think about. But we're also going to tell a story. And there's going to be some stories in it that the kids know. And so I think everybody can pull something out of this lesson this evening. At least that is my hope. So we're going to start with Stephen's sermon. That's Acts chapter 7. Let me go back just a little bit in Acts chapter 6. I think this is very, very important. Acts 6 and 13 says, they, and parenthetically I inserted here, these are the men from the synagogue of the freedmen, is what the Bible says. also set of false witnesses who said, this man, speaking of Stephen, does not cease to speak blasphemous words against this holy place and the law. So I kind of underlined here and highlighted it for us. There's two charges that are being brought against Stephen. And it's by these freedmen, the synagogue of the freedmen. Those were probably the Hellenistic Jews. That meant they were Jews, but they spoke Greek. And so they kind of kept to themselves, and they may not have been quite as associated with the Hebrew and the Hebrews that lived there in Jerusalem. But they had their own little synagogue, and they have gotten very upset with Stephen. Probably has something to do with the way that the widows were being treated. If you remember back to that story, why Stephen was selected to be one of the leaders of the church in the first place. But anyway, there's two charges. That he spoke against this holy place and the law. So let's talk about the charges against Stephen. So I'm trying to make this kind of visual for us. There's two charges. He says, one, he spoke against this holy place. And I use that as a quotation. And the law. So what is he talking about? What are the freedmen? What are they upset with Stephen? Well, continue to verse 14. For we have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place and change the customs which Moses delivered unto us. So we're going to add a piece to our puzzle now. That this Jesus of Nazareth, that's what Stephen is teaching, and it's going to cross these two charges. That Jesus is somehow related to the idea of this holy place and to the law. So what has Stephen done? Why are these freedmen so upset with Jesus? We'll try one more time. Notice the last part of this verse. It says, this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place and change the customs which Moses delivered to us. So again, we're still talking about the same two charges now. There was the charge of this holy place, which he later in the verse, the freedmen describe as this place. And then the law is further described as the customs which Moses delivered to us. And as Stephen has been preaching and teaching, he is applying Jesus of Nazareth to these two charges. That's what they're upset about. And so I began to try to think about this. What exactly are they talking about? When they start talking about this place, what are these freedmen of the synagogue, what are they referring to? What are they so upset about? Well, I think this place is pretty obvious. I think he's talking about the city of Jerusalem. And more important than the city of Jerusalem, I think he's talking about the temple. That Stephen had been speaking out against the temple at Jerusalem. Jews, you think they are nationalistic today? You should have tried it back in the time when their temple still existed. They were very territorial in consideration of the temple. That was so important because they were the chosen people of God. And they believed in that temple. And they believed in that city, Jerusalem. And that meant the world to them. And so I believe these people are upset because Stephen, in teaching of Jesus, has spoken out against the holy place. He's spoken out against Jerusalem. He's spoken out against the temple. Okay? Now let's look at the other charge. What about the law? These customs that he says. Well, I believe that's the scriptures. That Stephen, while teaching of Jesus, has spoken out against the scriptures. When I say scriptures, what am I referring to? Because that's the word that was used. Now, let me give you another verse. In Luke, the 24th chapter, Jesus is speaking. And this is the resurrected Lord talking. He says, then he said to them, these are the words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things must be fulfilled which were written in. And now I've kind of added some numbers here. There's threefold. This is the way the Jews looked at the scriptures. They broke into three parts. Number one, the law of Moses. Number two, the prophets. Number three, the Psalms concerning me. As we go through our study of Acts chapter 7 and all these different little subtopics, I want you to notice the law of Moses, the words of the prophets, and the Psalms. And see how many of those begin to appear in Acts chapter 7. Because that's how the Jews separated the scriptures. Verse 45, and he opened their understanding that they might comprehend the scriptures. If you were a first century Jewish person and someone said the scriptures, that's what it meant. The law of Moses, the words of the prophets, and the Psalms. That's what they considered as the holy scriptures. So, we've got this whole situation now with Stephen. And he is preaching Jesus. And they said, listen, you are speaking out against this place and against the customs which Moses has presented unto us. So I'm going to try to simplify it a little bit. This holy place, I'm going to simplify this as location. That Stephen was speaking out against location. And when he's talking about the scriptures and he's talking about the customs which Moses delivered, he's talking about obedience. That's the two charges against Stephen. That Stephen was disrespecting the location and he was disrespecting the concept of obedience. As we go through these passages and we look at these different things over the coming weeks, you see something about a location. A town, a region. Make special note of that. Because there's something important, I think, to the concept of location. That's what Stephen is trying to make a point of, is about location. You'll see what I mean, hopefully, by the end of our lesson. He's also going to talk about obedience. And more than likely, disobedience. In each little section that we begin to read, ask yourself, were these people obedient or were they disobedient? And that's what builds up the anger of these Jews in Stephen's talk. It really didn't have anything to do with Jesus. It really didn't have anything to do with the church. It's about location and obedience. And you got to look at some of these words rather carefully to understand why they had such a powerful impact upon the audience. So here we go. Ask yourself this question. Why would this sermon make the Jews angry enough to stone the preacher to death? What is it about these words? Because basically it's very similar to Peter's sermon in Acts chapter 2. They didn't want to stone Peter. 3,000 of them came running to be saved. What is so different about what Peter said and what Stephen said? And that's what we're going to look at over this coming month. So here's our lesson for this evening. Stephen and the patriarchs. Now the word patriarch just means the head of the household. It can go all the way back to Abraham. For our study tonight, the term patriarch refers to Jacob and his 12 sons. And they're going to form the lineage of the 12 tribes of Israel. So, we start out in chapter 7, verse 9. And the patriarchs, becoming envious, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his troubles. So, we're going to begin this whole little passage, and it's going to refer to the patriarch, Jacob, and his 12 sons. Now, I like this part about God was with him. And I want you to think about this. If you want to only get one thing out of this lesson, make sure God's with you. Or better said, make sure you're with God. Probably the better way to say that. The Bible says in Genesis 39:2, the Lord was with Joseph. Very simple. And he was a successful man. If you want to be successful, make sure you're on God's side. And that to me can be the definition of success. Some people want to define success by how much money you've got, what kind of car you drive, what kind of job you have. No. Success is defined, I think, whether or not the Lord is with us. So, if you get nothing out of this lesson, remember that. If you want to be successful, make sure you are with the Lord. So, here we continue. Verse 10 says, and he delivered him out of all his troubles, and gave him favor and wisdom in the presence of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he made him governor over Egypt and over all his house. Now a famine and great trouble came over all the land of Egypt and Canaan, and our fathers found no sustenance. But when Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent out our fathers first. And the second time Joseph was made known to his brothers, and Joseph's family became known to the Pharaoh. Then Joseph sent and called his father Jacob and all his relatives to him, 75 people. So Jacob went down to Egypt, and he died, he and our fathers. If you're a Jew, would you be upset by those words?
No.
It's just a retelling of history, of the history of the nation of Israel. Now, we'll tell you, he's pretty concise. Oh, Stephen does a pretty good job of being concise. That's about 13 years worth of history condensed into a little big paragraph about that big. So I'm going to kind of tell you now from a narrative standpoint. And we'll try to look at a narrative of the life of Joseph. And then we'll kind of compare how Stephen did. So here we go. Narrative of Joseph's life. You're going to hear so many things that you're familiar with. So many stories we've heard our entire lives kind of come to light in this situation. First of all, remember Joseph? He was about 17 years old. And he started having some dreams. And I put on here the dreams of the sheaves and the astronomy, for lack of a better word. The sheaves, he had this dream and he told his brothers about it. He was so excited that the grain, the sheaves of grain, I guess now we would say cotton bales, I guess if you lived out of a wall, but it had all these sheaves. He said, I saw 11 of them and they all bowed down to me. The brothers knew what that meant, that the brothers were bowing down to Joseph. And then he had another dream. Yeah, he should have just kept his mouth shut, probably. But he said, I had another one. He said, the sun bowed down to me, and the moon bowed down to me, and then 11 stars bowed down to me. But what he was talking about was his father was going to bow down, and his mother was going to bow down, and the 11 brothers were all going to bow down. And that didn't go over so well with his older brothers. In fact, they had about all they could take of him in his fancy little coat of many colors. Remember that his daddy made sure he was daddy's favorite. And he had the coat of many colors, and they didn't appreciate it. So one day, they were off working, the 11 brothers, and Joseph is sent out to deal with the brothers. And they have an idea. Let's kill him. And one of the brothers said, I put his group and said, no, let's don't kill him, but let's sell him into slavery. So they threw him in a pit. They took his fancy little coat of many colors and they dipped it in the blood of an animal, and then that way it would look like Joseph had been killed. They went back and told their dad, I'm sorry, Joseph, you know, Joseph is dead. He was attacked and he's no longer with us. In reality, they sold him to a caravan of tradesmen who were on their way to Egypt. And so they sold him, thinking we'll never have to deal with this guy again forever. Well, he was sold to a man by the name of Potiphar. And Potiphar was an Egyptian aristocrat. He was way high up as a governor in the Egyptian government in some form. And Potiphar didn't take very long to figure out. There's something special about this man, Joseph. He is smart because God was with him. So he knew what to do and how to act. And he was a good manager of the house. And so before too long, Joseph is elevated to the head of Potiphar's house. And he is making decisions left and right. Now, he only had one problem. Is that he was also a pretty good-looking fellow. And he's young. He's about 17, 18 years old by this time. And Potiphar's wife, before too long, takes kind of a shine to old Joseph. And she begins to make some advances towards Joseph. And Joseph doesn't want to have any part of it. And so he takes off running away from the presence of Potiphar's wife. Well, only one little problem. Potiphar's wife said, he tried to sexually assault me. He tried to rape me. And so what happens to old Joseph? Well, he gets sent to prison. It reminded me a little bit about Jeff's lesson on Wednesday night. Is this good or bad? You know, is this good luck or bad luck? Oh, he got sent to prison despite being innocent. Well, that really seems like bad luck, right? Well, in the grand scheme of things, it was actually a pretty good deal. Because when he got sent to prison, he was thrown into a cell with two men. He was thrown into a cell with the butler of Pharaoh as well as the baker. And as he's sitting in there with the butler and the baker, they begin to tell him of some dreams that they have had. And the butler says, I had this dream no one can interpret it for me. And Joseph says, lay it on me. And so he tells his story about he sees this branch, and there's this big vine with three branches coming off of it. And he sees some grapes. And he pulls the grapes off and he squeezes them in the cup of his master. He said, I don't know what that means. And Joseph said, I'll tell you what it means. He says, within 3 days, you're going to be restored to your position. You're going to become his butler again. And the baker says, wow, that's a great one. How about you interpret my dream for me if it's all that good? He said, I had this dream. There were these three baskets on my head with all sorts of bakery items, and the birds were coming in and eating them. And Joseph said, well, yours is not quite so good. He says, your dream means that within 3 days, he said, Pharaoh's going to execute you for whatever you've done. Sure enough, within 3 days, the butler is restored to his position, and the baker, he's executed for the things that he's done. And so for 2 more years, Joseph has to sit in prison. But there's something good that's going to come out of it, because the butler is going to be restored to his position under Pharaoh. 2 years later, while Joseph is wasting away in prison, Pharaoh has been having some dreams. And now he is just overwhelmed with this dream. And he starts talking to all his people. No one can interpret it. And all of a sudden, the butler has been restored, and he goes, wait a minute. There's a guy in prison that can interpret dreams. His name is Joseph. And so, sure enough, the Pharaoh calls him up, pulls Joseph out of jail, brings him up to the house, and said, I've been having this dream. Can you interpret for me? And for whatever reason, this was always Jake's favorite little story. I don't know, but here was the story. He said, I had a dream, and there were these 7 fat cows. and they were coming out of the river. And next thing you know, seven skinny cows came up, and the seven skinny cows ate the fat cows. He said, I don't know what that means. And Joseph said, I'll tell you what it means. He says, there's going to be seven good years of harvest. And then there's going to be 7 years of famine. And the famine is going to wipe out the land. He said, there's an impending famine coming, and you better do something about it. And so Pharaoh's kind of taken aback by this. He's very impressed with Joseph. And before you know it, Joseph is appointed, and I made this up, Secretary of Agriculture, because I don't know what you would call it. But Joseph had been appointed to something in the government where he was in charge of the grain. So I called him the Secretary of Agriculture. I don't know if that would be an appropriate title or not. But Joseph then institutes what I call the 20% plan. And what Joseph said was a fifth of everything, 20% of everything that was grown, harvested, was going to be placed in reserves. So for 7 years, the Egyptians began hoarding their grain, 20% of it with every harvest. And they built up this remarkable granary thanks to Joseph. And so now by this time, Joseph again is way high up in the government. The famine then comes, just like Joseph said it would. But Egypt is prepared because of Joseph and his 20% plan. But before too long, Joseph's brothers, living out in the sticks in Canaan, come to Egypt because there's no food. The only place that has food is the place that was prepared, which was Egypt because of Joseph. And here we go with Jeff's story again. It just keeps going back because he was in prison at the same time as the butler and all the way back. Everything had a place. God took care of his people. We can spend a lot of time now with the back and forth situation between Joseph and his brothers, but just condense it to say that in time, the entire family was invited to come from Canaan and to live in Egypt where there was food so they would be safe. And the Bible says the entire family comes up, 75 of them, and they move, they relocate from Canaan to Egypt. And finally, Jacob, Joseph's father, dies there in Egypt. Would you be offended by any of these words if you were a Jew? And again, I say no. He's just explaining what happened. So why in the world were the Jews getting so wound up on Stephen that they were willing to smash him to death with rocks? Well, I think there's something to it. And I think the next verse adds something. Verse 16. After Joseph's father Jacob died, it says, and they were carried back to, hey, wait a minute, we talked about that this morning. They were carried back to Shechem and laid in the tomb that Abraham brought. Remember I told you, be very, very careful as we read through this. Two things. Location and obedience. So here we have a location. What is important about Shechem? Why did Joseph feel the need to talk about Shechem? Well, don't forget about the charges that were brought against Stephen. The charges brought against Stephen was location. He spoke out against this holy place, and obedience. He was speaking out against the law or the customs that Moses had delivered unto them. There's something important about Shechem. We learned this morning that Shechem today, you would say, is in the West Bank. You think the Jews like having Shechem in the West Bank under Palestinian control? You think they enjoy having the Palestinians over their holy sites? You think it was bad then? Let me tell you, it's even worse back in the days of Jesus. Let me tell you about Shechem. It was a city located in the land of Samaria. So now today we call it the West Bank. Back then they called it Samaria. Jacob, and later on we find out Joseph as well, was buried in Samaria. And the Jews hated that because the Jews hated the Samaritans. This was embarrassing. This was something they just assumed not ever admit to, that they had anything to do with Samaria. Remember how it worked? Let's see, this would be Judea down here if I'm going up a map. Judea, Samaria was north of it, and then Galilee was on top of it. If you were going from Judea to Samaria, you went around. Or from Judea rather to Galilee, you would go around. You would not step foot inside Samaria because the Jews hated the Samaritans and the Samaritans hated the Jews. And Jesus used that to his advantage a couple of times. Remember the story of the Good Samaritan? Oh, I bet that burned those Jews up. Having a Samaritan elevated to a position of respect, ooh, they did not like that at all. So, think about the Samaritans now. The Jews hated this fact. They hated the fact that there were holy sites that were in Samaria. And I think that's exactly why Stephen reminded him of that. And so he talks about Shechem. They didn't appreciate that at all. That was infuriating to the Jews to be reminded of Shechem. So let's go back down the story of Jesus. Remember one time Jesus did go through Samaria? And it says he was going to Galilee. He walked straight through Samaria. And they thought he was crazy, his apostles. What are you doing? Well, in John, the 4th chapter, he meets a woman at the well of Samaria. Now, it has a different name of a town. S-Y-C-H-A-R. Shiker, or however you pronounce that. And most people think that that is Shechem. Or it's at least a town that's right beside it. It's in that same area. It says, a woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jews hated Samaritans, and Samaritans hated the Jews. So when Stephen starts reminding them about Shechem, I'm sure they didn't appreciate it. Remember, it's about location and obedience. So let's keep going on Shechem. Remember about Mount Gerizim? Did you know that Shechem was located at the base of Mount Gerizim? And since the Jews and the Samaritans had no dealings with each other, they had made a decision. Well, if the Jews aren't going to deal with the Samaritans and the Samaritans aren't going to deal with the Jews, then you know what? The Samaritans said, you can keep your stinking temple in Jerusalem. We'll build our own temple. And they did. They built their own temple at Mount Gerizim. Remember how we had two mountains? There was Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Very important throughout the scriptures. Mount Gerizim is where the blessings were, and Mount Ebal is where the curses were, and the people had to walk before it, and Joseph read the entire passage, the entire scripture. I mean, this is a great story. And by the way, that's not Gerizim and Ebal, that's Twin Buttes. Just to kind of help remember, every time you see Twin Buttes, think about Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. But on Mount Gerizim, that's where they had built their own temple. Now does it make sense what the Samaritan woman said to Jesus later in that chapter? John 4, chapter verse 20. It says, our fathers worship on this mountain. What mountain? Mount Gerizim. Our fathers worshiped on Mount Gerizim. And you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. And Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. What does he mean? What is being said? Well, as my friend Scott Alexander, the realtor, would tell you, it's location, location, location. Do you understand the point that Stephen is, it's a very subtle point. He's just kind of twisting it a little bit on it. It's a very subtle point. But what was the purpose of Stephen's discussion of the patriarchs? Was it to remind these Jews all the great things that Joseph did in Egypt? I don't think so. Was it his purpose to retell the story about how the famine came? I don't think so. I believe he had a purpose in speaking of location. In the same way that Jesus said, there's coming a time where you're not going to worship in Mount Gerizim, or you're also not going to worship in Jerusalem. The temple is going to lose its value. The temple is going to lose its position. And the Jews hated that thought. And they could not stand the fact that the temple was going away. So what was the purpose? Did you realize God protected the obedient while they were in Canaan? See, the Jews thought everything revolved around Jerusalem. And Stephen reminds them, God protected the obedient in Canaan. God protected the obedient in Egypt. And guess what? They hated this one the most. God protected the obedient even in Shechem, even in Samaria. The location did not matter. The world did not revolve around the temple at Jerusalem. And that's what he's saying. They are angry at him. This is what got him upset. That all of a sudden, now what were the charges brought against Stephen? That he was speaking out against this place. He's speaking out against the temple. And he was speaking out against the law. The customs that Moses had handed down to them. So now do we see why Stephen's really getting under their skin. It's kind of a subtle thing. And he's going to get more and more blatant as his sermon goes on. Because I'm still trying to figure out what he was upset with. How they could get upset with Abraham. I have a thought, we'll go into that later on, but Not much bad you can say about Abraham, what Stephen said about Abraham. And now we move to the patriarchs. It's kind of hard to figure out where he's going with this. Trust me, it's going to get more and more obvious when he starts talking about the rebellious children of Israel and the rebellious leaders and what they've done. But he's getting under their skin. So what's the conclusion? Stephen used the example of the patriarchs to show that God would protect the faithful regardless of location. It was not about the temple in Jerusalem anymore. The exact same thing that Jesus taught the woman at the well. He said, there is coming a time that you're not going to worship God in Mount Gerizim, and you're not going to worship God in the temple either. That's about to end. Something new is coming. Stephen had been charged with speaking out against the temple, against this place, which in fact is exactly what Stephen had done. He had spoken out against the temple in the exact same way that Jesus had spoken out against the temple. Remember, the apostles were so impressed with the building of the temple, and he said, there's not going to be a stone left standing one upon another. He said, it's going to be destroyed. Jesus spoke out against the temple too, but so did Stephen. It's exactly what he's doing. He is speaking out against the temple because he said it's not going to be important anymore. And he's using the concept of location, that God took care of his people in Canaan. God took care of his people in Egypt. God took care of his people in Shechem. God takes care of his people wherever they are faithful, not just those that are huddled around this rock structure in the city of Jerusalem. And the Jews did not like to hear that at all. Christianity, you see, ushered in a new era where worship was not to be centered in Jerusalem. It was no longer to be a religion where folks had to go and assemble at the temple. It was going to be a different type of religion. And that's what made those Jews so mad. So we look at it, and I'll be honest, I look at it as a history lesson. To me, it seems like just a nice history lesson of the Jewish nation. But if you were a first century Jew, that's not what it was. This was pecking away, chipping away at their belief system that held the temple and the law of Moses into such high regard that they would do anything to sustain it. They did not ever believe the temple would fall. And for Stephen to come up here and speak out against the temple, and for Jesus to speak out against the temple, was more than they could handle. And that's what's getting these Jews so upset. So as we continue our study, we'll talk a little bit about Moses in the future and the tabernacle and the way they handled the prophets. Think about location. You see a name of a town, think, is there anything important about that location? And see if there's a degree of obedience or disobedience. Because that's what he has been charged with. And you know what? That's exactly what Stephen did. He was attacking the temple. And he was attacking the law of Moses. And that's what made him so upset. So I think it's a really neat little study. I'm kind of looking forward to it. And hope maybe we kind of got things off on the right foot. This Lord's Day. We never have to close though without having a song invitation. You need the help of the church. We're standing ready to assist.